Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Katie Weaver, Alice Bryant, and Brian Lynn. Later, Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
President Donald Trump spoke Monday about the weekend violence in Charlottesville, Virginia. He strongly criticized white supremacists and other hate groups. A 32-year-old woman was killed Saturday, and 19 people were injured when a man drove his car into a crowd of activists. They were protesting a white supremacist demonstration. Another 15 people were injured in fights between white supremacists and counter-demonstrators. Later Saturday, Trump said many sides were responsible for the violence. But Monday, after criticism of that statement, Trump spoke again.
Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans.
White nationalists, the KKK, and others had gone to Charlottesville to protest the city's decision to take down a monument. It was a statue of Robert E. Lee, an important Civil War general who fought for the Southern states. The Southern states were seeking to separate from the United States. Many find such monuments offensive because of the South's support for slavery. James Alex Fields, Jr. was charged with murder and other crimes in connection with the automobile incident. Police said he acted to kill and wound people with his car. The Associated Press and other news groups reported that Fields admired Adolf Hitler. Reports also said his social media presence suggested support for white nationalism.
Trump, a Republican, was not the only Trump administration official to criticize the violence in Charlottesville. Attorney General Jeff Sessions said Monday that the car attack in Charlottesville meets the definition of domestic terrorism. Some criticized Trump for not immediately criticizing white supremacists in his first statements. Nancy Pelosi is the leader of the Democrats in the House of Representatives. She said Trump's 2016 presidential campaign had the support of the, in her words, forces of bigotry and discrimination. It should not take 2 days for the president to criticize murder and violence by Nazis and white supremacists, Pelosi said.
There is hot debate about efforts to remove statues representing Confederate leaders. Such action is not only taking place in Charlottesville, but also in New Orleans, Louisiana, and Lexington, Kentucky. Some argue that taking down Civil War statues is denying history. Pierre McGraw led a group in New Orleans that tried unsuccessfully to stop the removal of 4 Confederate statues from the city. People across Louisiana should be concerned, over what will disappear next, he said. The city's mayor, Mitch Landrieu, gave a speech defending the city's action. He said, statues that honor slavery should not be permitted in a nation that long ago rejected slavery as the worst kind of hate.
In Charlottesville, the home of the University of Virginia, officials are hoping to move past the weekend's violence. Frank Connor III is a top University of Virginia official. He said, the actions of those who visited evil upon us are nothing short of white nationalist and white supremacist terrorism intended to intimidate our community. They will not succeed. We will not surrender. Larry Sabato is a political science professor at the University of Virginia with a home on campus. Several hundred marchers carried burning sticks and shouted racist and pro-Nazi statements there on Friday night. My father fought in World War II against the Nazis all the way to Berlin, Sabato said. I'm glad he's not here decades later to see that hundreds of neo-Nazi thugs can march their way up the University of Virginia lawn past his son's home, spouting racist and anti-Semitic slogans. Sabato said he believes white nationalists felt supported by the president's first statement because he did not directly criticize them for the violence.
Nagata Lewis teaches at Tulane University in New Orleans and has followed the battle over the city's Confederate monuments. She was asked what people outside the United States should know about these fights. Lewis said, while there is much to admire about our country, U.S. history is complex. She said America is still a very young nation and still early in the process of undoing its history of slavery and racial discrimination.
The leader of America's third largest drug company resigned from a federal advisory group Monday in connection with Trump's first response to Charlottesville. Kenneth Frazier said, America's leaders must reject those who say that one racial group is better than another. Trump later criticized Frazier in a Twitter post. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Bruce Alpert.
As America's nuclear power industry continues to suffer major economic difficulties, some are questioning whether it can or should survive. The latest setback came July 31st when state power companies in South Carolina halted construction of two reactors. After spending about $9 billion, the companies decided that increasing costs and repeated building delays did not make the project worth finishing. U.S. energy company Westinghouse Electric had been building the nuclear plant, which it started in 2012. In March, Westinghouse filed for bankruptcy, due in part to huge losses related to the South Carolina project, as well as others. Industry groups had hoped the South Carolina reactors would mark a new beginning for U.S. nuclear power and show the benefits of the latest technology.
The United States remains the world's top producer of nuclear power, according to the British-based World Nuclear Association. The country's 100 reactors provide nearly 20% of total U.S. electrical output. However, only two new nuclear reactors are currently being built in the United States, both of them in Georgia. The reactors were the first large nuclear plants to be started in the United States in more than 30 years. And the future of those reactors is uncertain. The project, currently about half finished, has also suffered major cost overruns and delays. For now, the company's parent, Japan-based Toshiba, has promised to provide at least $3.7 billion to finish the project.
One of the main factors causing the industry's economic problems is the country's large, cheap supply of natural gas. The supply became available due to widespread fracking operations. There is also much lower demand in the U.S. for electricity than ever before. This came about after many improvements in energy efficiency and success with conservation efforts. President Donald Trump has called for a complete review of U.S. nuclear energy policy in an effort to revitalize the industry. Secretary of Energy Rick Perry has also said he sees nuclear power as a very important part of future U.S. energy policy. There has also been support from both major parties in Congress.
David Fedor is a researcher with the Hoover Institution's Shultz-Stevenson Task Force on Energy Policy. He says states and the federal government can take steps to help energize the U.S. nuclear industry, mainly by providing financial assistance.
Congress could increase the subsidies to nuclear to the level that they give to other power generation technologies like wind and solar that have similarly desirable attributes, basically no pollution and essentially no carbon emissions.
Fedor said another action could be putting a carbon tax on plants fueled by coal, oil, or natural gas. The idea is that this could indirectly benefit the nuclear industry by making costs higher for companies producing environment-harming emissions. He also said the industry needs to be more efficient, reduce costs, and sell the public on why nuclear is still a good energy option.
When you talk about these newer technologies that are sort of walk away safe, then people sort of shift in their perspective, like, oh, okay, this is something new. This is not the same old thing that we've been talking about for the past 20 or 30 years. And so there's some excitement there.
But some opponents say they've been hearing the same arguments in support of nuclear power for decades. Paul Gunter is a longtime anti-nuclear activist. He co-founded the Clamshell Alliance in 1976. The group was formed to oppose the Seabrook Station nuclear plant in New Hampshire. He and hundreds of other protesters were arrested during nonviolent demonstrations against the project. Gunter says his main opposition was that the licensing approval process was corrupt.
For example, you couldn't raise the issue of what are you going to do with all the nuclear waste from Seabrook? And that question was not allowed in the licensing proceedings.
Seabrook Station was eventually completed at a cost of about $7 billion and began operations in 1990. The Clamshell Alliance helped shape America's anti-nuclear movement for many years to come. Another defining moment came after the Three Mile Island plant accident in Pennsylvania in 1979, the worst nuclear disaster in U.S. history. A series of mechanical and human mistakes sent one of the reactors into a partial meltdown, sending large amounts of radiation into the surrounding area. Gunter says even before that accident, there were clear signs the nuclear industry would not be economically sustainable. Today, he says neither state utility providers nor large energy companies are willing to put up money for risky nuclear projects.
So the only way that you can revive nuclear power is going to be through socializing its financing through the ratepayer and the taxpayer. But at this point, we're seeing the ratepayer become the irate payer when you waste billions and billions of dollars and decades on a predictable outcome.
Some energy experts have suggested that one way to revive U.S. nuclear power is to completely scale down the way reactors are currently designed and built. They say this approach could improve efficiency and safety of plants while cutting costs. Jacobo Buongiorno is a professor of nuclear science and engineering at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT. He says one option is to build small modular reactors. These reactors work much the same way as large plants, but would greatly reduce building time and total costs.
They're small. They could be, in principle, built in factories and then delivered to the site in larger pieces. So you're shifting work from an environment which is intrinsically expensive and low productivity, a construction site, to an environment which is intrinsically high productivity and less expensive.
He added that these power generators could be built in 3 to 4 years compared to 7 to 10 years or more for larger reactors. Buongiorno is also studying the possibility of small nuclear plants that would float in the sea. These could improve safety by being far away from population centers in case of accident. The ocean water could also help the reactor's necessary cooling process. Despite the U.S. downturn, some parts of the world are expanding their nuclear power capability. Asia currently has the most nuclear plants under construction, according to the World Nuclear Association. At the end of 2016, 20 of the world's 61 nuclear power projects were in China, the organization reported. Another 15 were being built in India, Pakistan, and Russia. In Europe, France operates by far the most reactors, 58. But new French energy policy aims to reduce the country's share of nuclear energy from 75% today to 50% by 2025. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
This is What's Trending Today. That is the sound of Big Ben. People from London like to call the ringing of Big Ben bongs. They mark the start of a new hour. Big Ben is the name of the large bell inside the clock tower above Britain's Houses of Parliament. The tower is part of the Palace of Westminster. There are other smaller bells, too. Big Ben started making its bongs 158 years ago. But beginning on August 21st, it will go silent for 4 years. The bell will ring for the last time at 12 noon. The bell will be disconnected from the clock as crews launch a major repair project in the tower. The clock, however, will continue to tell the time, silently. The only time people in London will hear the bells will be on Remembrance Sunday, which falls on November 12th this year, and New Year's Eve. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Small talk, chit chat. These are the short conversations we have at parties, while we wait in line at the store, at family events, or work. Sometimes we make small talk with people we already know, but not well. Often we have to make small talk with complete strangers. Many people find these small conversations about random topics difficult. Some people say they hate it. Others say small talk is a waste of time. They may even call it idle chit-chat or idle chatter, meaning it doesn't do anything. They consider small talk not important. However, small talk is important. These exchanges can open doors that may lead to larger, more meaningful conversations. When you first meet someone or talk to someone you don't know well, it would be awkward to begin a conversation about a really deep topic, such as war, politics, or the meaning of life. Small talk also gives you the chance to decide if you want to get to know that person better or not. Let's say you make small talk with someone at a party, but they only want to talk about cats. You may not want to build a friendship with them unless you really, really love cats. Chit-chat can also increase your feeling of understanding or empathy toward people you know but not well. Chatting with a colleague about their child may help you to understand more of their life outside the office. This could help build healthy work relationships.
Small talk could even help our larger communities, our relationships with neighbors and colleagues. Exchanging a recipe with a neighbor in your apartment building may make her noises upstairs easier to live with. And small talk may make us happier. In 2011, most commuters in the city of Chicago said they would enjoy quiet cars, where they sat alone and did not talk to anybody. Researchers at the University of Chicago then asked some participants in a study to talk to people while commuting to work on a train. They found that those who made small talk with strangers were happier than those who sat alone. In 2013, researchers from the University of Essex in Britain asked some people to make small talk in a similar study. They found people who talked briefly with a cashier in a coffee shop felt happier than those who simply went in, ordered, and left. However, some people are not good at small talk. Making small talk doesn't have to be either awkward or boring. Here are some tips to improve your small talking ability. Number 1. Have some conversation starters ready. If you have seen a really good movie or have read a really good book, you can talk about that. You can talk about something that you recently learned. When you are sharing the same experience with someone, it's easy to start a conversation. You simply notice and comment on what's going on around you. For example, if you are at a party and a song comes on that you like or that reminds you of something, you can talk about that. Number 2. Ask open-ended questions. These types of questions require more thought and more than a simple one-word answer. If you ask questions that need more details to answer, the conversation will go on longer. For example, if you are at a summer pool party, don't ask a person if they like summer. Instead, ask them what they like or dislike about summer. So instead of getting a one-word answer, you might have the chance to share in a memory. Number 3. Become a student. Nobody knows everything, so as someone is answering one of your open-ended questions, they bring up something about which you know nothing. So tell them. This lets the other person become the teacher. They feel good about sharing their knowledge, and you get to learn something. It's a win-win situation. Number 4. Don't ask, "So, what do you do?" Some people do not like their jobs, or maybe they don't want to talk about it. So instead of asking, "What do you do for a living?" ask something like, "So, what have you been doing these days?" Or, "So, what have you been up to?" One general question can lead to an opportunity to share something you have in common. So ask questions. Ask people about their families, their passions, their ambitions, or even their fears. However, balance these questions with comments about yourself. Asking too many questions may make people feel they are in an interview rather than in a conversation. Like anything, getting good at making small talk takes practice. If you make small talk in your native language, you might become happier. If you are making small talk using English, you will most definitely improve your speaking and listening skills. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.